Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. To my right, it is the sports machine, Sean Levine. Directly in front of me is Rob Britton. You are listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll be joined by Brian Fisher, who covers college football. It is getting very close to the time where colleges and universities are having to make decisions on what fall sports are going to look like and how that affects football. We'll talk to Brian Fisher about that coming up in 30 minutes. But again, you're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. What do you think was a bigger deal this week when it came to Chiefs signing quarterbacks? When Pat signed the $500 million contract, or about 30 minutes ago when Matt Moore inked a deal to be the backup again for next year?
I mean, obviously it's Patrick Mahomes, but everybody's kind of getting the jokes off. The Chiefs are doing the right thing. If Patrick Mahomes gets the coronavirus, which is certainly a possibility, you want to have as many quality backups in the tuck as possible. So I'm not faulting any team for going out there and sending or and signing other quarterbacks. So I understand that this isn't one that really moves the needle, but if they have an NFL season, some team is going to lose their starting quarterback, not to injury, but because of the coronavirus. So you got to take every precaution. I give Kansas City a lot of credit for making that move.
I should come over there and wash your mouth out with soap just for talking like that. Yes, I understand it is an actual possibility, but and Matt Moore did a very nice job last year keeping that ship afloat. So I guess you're right. You need backups.
Absolutely. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll catch up with Brian Fisher. He is with Athlon Sports. So the top story today in Kansas City is actually about Kansas State basketball. They have signed a series with Wichita State. So this is how it breaks down. In 2021, they will play Wichita State in Intrust Bank Arena. That is in Wichita. In 2022, they will play a game in Manhattan, Kansas. In 2023, they will play at the T-Mobile Center here in Kansas City. And in 2024, they will go back to Wichita and play in the Coach Arena. This is the thing. If you didn't know, and let's say you were oblivious to these two universities, and you were oblivious to their basketball programs, and you just looked at the way the deal was structured, you would think that Wichita State was the larger university. You would think that Wichita State was big brother in this deal. You would look at K-State as being the little brother. Typically, in deals of this magnitude, you sign a 1-1-1. If this was one game on campus at Wichita, one game on campus for K-State, and then you play one game at Sprint Center, I don't think this would be that big of a deal. Would you be talking about the celebration of college basketball and the fact that two prominent basketball universities have come to an agreement to play a game that's fun for the fans here? But when I really think about this and I hold it up to the light, when you compare it to the MU and KU agreement, although Kansas is the clearly superior basketball program, they signed a deal with Missouri that makes them look like equals. Kansas could have very easily strong-armed Missouri in this deal, got a two-for-one deal, and then if Missouri didn't accept it, they could have came back to people like me and said, hey, you guys wanted to play Kansas. We were happy to play you guys, but look, you guys turned down the deal that we gave you. If you guys really want to play Kansas, this is the deal that it would take to play Kansas. When I look at this deal, I think K-State gave up way too much. How is playing a neutral site game 8 minutes from the campus of Wichita State, how is in that your basketball program's and your university's best interest? I think K-State gave way too much in this deal to finally play the Shockers.
I guess I don't see anything that makes K-State Wichita State's older brother, unless you want to say one of them plays in the AAC and the other one plays in the Big 12. But besides that, I mean, just look, in the last 12 years, K-State has had three 25-win seasons. In that same time, Wichita State has had nine 25-win seasons, including four separate times Wichita State won 30 games. And I get it. It was just the AAC or the MVC at the time, but they went 17-1 in conference. The year before that, they were 16-2. The year before that, 17-1. And then they were 18-0. Remember, that was the year that they went 35-1. So I'm not saying they're Gonzaga, but they're the next best thing. I don't see what makes K-State big brother. If anything, Wichita State's the big brother in the last 10 years. Who is K-State put in the NBA? I'm not saying Wichita State's an NBA factory, but they've got Fred VanVleet. So I think that if you just compare the two programs and forget what conference they come from, it's not even close which one's the better program.
Yeah, I agree. But us knowing that and K-State acknowledging it today are two completely different things. I'm with you. There's no denying over the last 12 years who's been the better college basketball program. But to agree to a deal that basically says, hey, this deal's in your best interest and not in our best interest is really surprising to me. I would hate if Missouri did this deal. Like, if Missouri did this deal with Mo State or Missouri did this deal with SLU, I would look at this as, what in the hell are you doing? Why would you agree to this deal? Out of these four games, I would say K-State has the disadvantage in three of those games and probably goes 3-1 in the stretch. If I'm going to be the Big 12 school that hops out and makes it where, let's not kid ourselves, if Wichita State beat K-State, people like you are going to get your jokes off about the Wildcats and say, hey, you guys want to be little brother to Kansas and your little brother to Wichita State, where they were sort of out of sight and out of mind in this. As a college basketball fan, I think today is a good day, and I'm never going to condemn teams for playing fun, entertaining, exciting non-conference games, and I think college basketball needs more of that. I'm just looking at the agreement. I'm just saying, why don't you do a 1-1-1, or why don't you do a 6-year deal in the same vein that we just saw Kansas and Missouri do it? Why would you sign up to a deal where at the beginning of it, I think it puts you at a disadvantage?
Well, first of all, I don't think you can use SLU and Missouri State and then Wichita State as the same example. I mean, I can't name one player. I don't know if SLU basketball is any good. Same thing with Mo State. We all know what Wichita State has become. I think the best barometer for this is going to be, you said one of those games is in Kansas City, right?
Yes.
At the Sprint, T-Mobile, Sandstone, whatever they're calling, we're calling that arena nowadays. That to me is going to be the biggest test, and I'm very curious how the crowd is split and how full that place is, because we've seen when KU comes to town, they slap that Jayhawk logo on the middle of the court at the Sprint Center / T-Mobile, whatever we're calling it these days, and then there's 15,000 people there, standing room only outside. It's a little bit different if we're being real. You and I were both at that MU game earlier this year. Same thing with when K-State comes around. What happens when it's K-State and Wichita State in Kansas City? To me, that's a real test of at least fan interest around these parts of where those programs are.
I'm curious if you think this puts any pressure on Kansas to agree to something with Wichita State, because there was a time where when Wichita State was one of the big boys, when they were on the same tier as Gonzaga, their coach was calling out Bill Self in Kansas and saying they're basically afraid to play us every single day. Now, it's dialed down since he doesn't have those elite talent. You don't have Ron Baker. You don't have Landry Shamet. You don't have Tyree Cotton and those great players that they had at Wichita State. Do you think this puts any pressure on the Jayhawks to agree to a deal with the Shockers?
Probably, but the thing about it is, if K-State loses or splits these games, then that's expected. If KU loses to Wichita State, then nothing good comes of that, certainly for KU. And it's never going to be the type of thing where Wichita State starts getting recruits over Kansas or anything like that. It's just a bad look. So even though there's probably going to be more pressure, I don't think that it changes anything for Kansas. I was thinking about it, though, when we were comparing the two programs between K-State and Wichita State. A lot of it comes down to who the coaches have been during that tenure. So the last 5 or 6 years, it's been Bruce Weber, and that's been up and down, I would say more up. Before that, he followed probably the two most popular K-State basketball coaches ever in Bob Huggins and Frank Martin. That entire time, it's been Greg Marshall, and I would say that Greg Marshall is on that second tier of great college basketball coaches. He's not the Tom Izzo or Bill Self or Mike Krzyzewski or any of those guys, but outside of, say, the top eight best coaches in college basketball, you start to bring up the name Greg Marshall.
Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll catch up with Brian Fisher and talk some college football as we are getting closer and closer to conferences needing to make a decision on what this fall sports season would look like. But coming up, people have tried to deny it, but the NFL is headed towards the same fight that baseball players were towards. We'll get into that coming up momentarily. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive, coming up in 15 minutes, We'll head to the West Coast and catch up with Brian Fisher, who covers college football for Athlon Sports, about the changes that could be coming to the 2020 college football season. So earlier today, Ian Rappaport tweeted this out. Here's an update on where things stand as we are 18 days out from when teams would start reporting for NFL training camps. Almost everything is done and agreed to except for the number of preseason games and testing protocols. It then goes on to say that no fans will be at training camp. Then moving on, where fans will be allowed to games, they will be required to wear face coverings. Actual training camp schedule can be tied to the preseason, blah, blah, blah. And then it also goes on to say that the economics are not finalized either. So basically, Ian Rappaport told us, as we are less than 3 weeks away from when NFL teams are supposed to be heading to training camp, and we will be getting ready to go to St. Joe, they don't have an agreement on how many games the preseason is going to be. They don't have any agreement on the test for the coronavirus and what the protocol is going to look like. They also don't have an agreement on the money. So what do you agree on? That you're going to play football this season? Like, they don't agree on anything here. This feels eerily similar to the conversations that we saw between the Major League Baseball Players Association and the Major League Baseball player owners. Earlier this week, NFL owners were talking about putting 30 to 35% of NFL players' salaries into escrow. We think the NFL players are signing up for that. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think we are going to see that the same fight and how nasty it got in public with the baseball players and their owners is going to happen in the NFL between their players and their owners.
The surprising thing to me is that the NFL is dealing with this only because, like, for baseball, they had to operate on the fly. So all the coronavirus stuff went down, remember, right before the NCAA tournaments, let's call it the middle of March or so, and then everybody has to make their decision. So the NBA is in the middle of the season, and college basketball is about to start their tournament, and baseball is going to start in 2 weeks. They had to act on the fly. The NFL's had the benefit of pretty much waiting and seeing, one, what these other leagues do, and two, what happens to coronavirus. And what's happened with coronavirus is really, like you said, not a whole lot. We don't have a virus. We don't have a cure for it, a vaccine. That's the word I was looking for. We don't have all the information that we need. Now you have to wear masks in some places. It's mandatory, but it's not everywhere. So it's crazy to think that, yeah, we're 18 days away and that all these decisions haven't been made yet. Now, teams are starting to decide what they're going to do with their fans come the regular season. I think we're going to find out pretty soon here the capacity that Arrowhead's going to be at. You read us a story a couple of days ago about the plan for season ticket holders. The Ravens are going to have 14%, or I should say 14,000 fans. Earlier today, Jacksonville announced that they're going to have 25% of their stadium full. So I think that's the next thing to come down. That, or the fact there's not going to be a preseason. It's hard to imagine that sometime CDOT in the next week or 10 days, we're not going to get the news. There's no preseason this year. We're just going to keep our fingers crossed that there's a regular season in the playoffs.
I just don't care what protocol. And I hear what you're saying. The NFL wanted to see what the NBA was going to do and wanted to see what Major League Baseball was going to do. Given that this is unprecedented, and we keep saying that and have been saying that since March, what protocol was there going to be in place that you could feel comfortable with how many people you need to run an NFL team? So think about everything that goes into training camp. How many people at a bare minimum do you think you need to hold a football practice? There's an 85-man roster. There's everybody on the coaching staff. There's the training table. There's the people that got to feed them. There's how many people we think that is? 300 people?
Maybe not that many. Maybe 200 people, a couple 200 hundred. People.
What protocols do we have in place to keep 200 people perfectly safe and secure, also keeping them away from each other at a safe distance and making sure that you can maintain and ensure the health of everybody? I don't think that protocol exists, so I don't care what the MLS is doing. They're doing something very different than what you're doing. They're moving people to a bubble where you got to come and go and we monitor and do all these kind of things. That's very different than what the NFL was going to do. The only reason the NFL didn't have this conversation earlier is their games were just further back than everybody else. They'd have been having the same fight that the NBA is having, the same fight that the MLS has happened, had this happened in December. But it didn't happen in December. It happened in March after their Super Bowl. So now they're at the same place that all these other leagues were in because they were either in the middle of their season or trying to start their season earlier than the NFL is.
Yeah, there's a reason why the UFC has been able to pull it off. And I said this from the beginning. You got a blue corner, you got a red corner, you got a couple of corner men, you got a cut man, you got a referee, and a couple of cameras. There's like 20 people in the whole building. You could probably do enough testing to at least at least try to prevent the spread of coronavirus if somebody gets it. With what you're talking about one team. You're talking about one team essentially trying to have a practice or just to do anything with about 150 or 200 people at minimum, times that times 32, plus travel, plus all the different stuff that goes into staying at the hotels and the food that they're eating and the buses that they're going in. There's just a lot of risk to think that what I think is going to happen, the more and more that I think about it and the more that we talk, teams are going to start to pull out the same way that we've seen in the MLS. We've kind of had a lot of fun with it because we're like, I don't really know what FC Dallas means. Or I don't even know what the Nashville, what the name of their MLS team is. But instead of that being the FC Dallas football team or football team, if that was the Dallas Mavericks basketball team or the Dallas Cowboys football team, it would be the biggest story in all of sports. And I think that if we don't think we're heading down that path where it's not just going to be a player, but an entire team is going to be effective, then I think it's pretty ignorant.
So you say that about a player. We're seeing prominent players in Major League Baseball, not just the rank and file guys. We are seeing guys who have a chance to make the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. So we saw David Price a couple of weeks ago. He opted out of this year's upcoming Major League Baseball season. Today, Buster Posey has announced that he will not play this season.
A week ago today, identical twin girls were born that my wife and I are adopting. And the adoption actually became official yesterday afternoon. And my wife, myself, and our older children are just overwhelmed with joy to welcome them to our family, to love them unconditionally, and just share life with them. The twins were born prematurely. Thank God they are doing really well, but they're going to have to be in the NICU for quite some time. And after much discussion with my wife and doctors, and a decision that I've wrestled with quite a bit since I knew that this adoption was on the table, I've decided to opt out of the 2020 baseball season. We feel this is the best decision for these babies and for our family as well.
So that's Buster Posey today announcing that he will not play for this upcoming season. I don't want to mince words here. This is by far and away the best player that has opted out of the season. Buster Posey is going to be in the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. He has made the All-Star 6 times. He's won 3 separate World Series. He has won NL MVP, Rookie of the Year, Silver Slugger 4 times, a batting championship as a catcher. Buster Posey is one of the greatest baseball players of all time. And when you hear his backstory, I don't know how anyone could fault him. So if you couldn't really hear the audio, he and his wife adopted identical twin girls. They were born prematurely. They are still in ICU, and they're going to be there for some time. So he has opted out of this season. It is going to happen in the NFL. None of us know who it's going to be when you think about how many NFL players they are, the diverse backgrounds that NFL players come from. At some point here in the next month, we are going to hear not just some unnamed punter that nobody knows about, that it's just, what does it matter? No one knows who that individual is. It is going to be a David Price type. It is going to be a Buster Posey type NFL player that opts out of the season. It's just too many players.
He's got a hell of a resume after you just read that. I think he was also, wasn't he the number one overall pick the year they got drafted? Yeah, that guy's done pretty much everything, including banking $160 million. So I think there are some guys early on in their career that want to play because of finances. There are some guys that want to play because they're like, to hell with it, I'm not afraid of the coronavirus. There are some guys that want to play for their legacy and different reasons. And then there are some guys that life calls and they don't want to play. And I have absolutely no problem. In fact, I have a problem with the person that does have a problem with Buster Posey not playing. I mean, come on, life calls sometimes. And would any of us take the risk if you're going to be adopting brand new newborn twins that obviously are at much higher risk than all the rest of us, especially if they're born premature? So this one to me is a no-brainer, but you're right. It's not the end of the story, and he's not the last baseball player. The next coin is going to be when a big football player decides not to play, especially if it's a quarterback, because we know how important those guys are. And it doesn't have to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. If it's somewhere in the middle of the pack, if Derek Carr decided this year that he wasn't going to play, that's going to become a huge story.
Or it's going to be when an NBA player decides to leave the bubble.
Absolutely.
Like that. I mean, there's a chance that happens. There's a player right now that's probably in the bubble that doesn't like it, doesn't like the food, doesn't like the accommodations, that's simply going to say, I'm not playing anymore the rest of the season. It will certainly be very interesting to track. Let's step aside here. Coming up next, don't turn that dial. We'll be joined by Brian Fisher of Athlon Sports to get us the latest on what college teams and conferences plan on doing this fall for the upcoming football season. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
back in on The Drive. Thanks so much for listening. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll get to a brand spanking new Levine's List. But right now, we're very happy to be joined by our next guest. He is with College Football Talk. He's one of the best college football voices in the country to talk to us about the latest that's going around the country and if we are going to see football this fall. Let's head to the phone line to be joined by Brian Fisher today on The Drive. Brian, really appreciate you coming on today.
Absolutely. Good to be on with you.
No, appreciate it. Let's start with this. What was your reaction to the news we saw from the Big Ten yesterday? And I imagine we can expect this from the other Power Five schools that they will only play conference games this year.
Yeah, I don't think there was really any surprise that this was ultimately the Big Ten's decision. I think there, if there was any element of surprise, I guess, among athletic directors and a couple of coaches and presidents, it was probably that, really, that it came yesterday. That I think there was a general kind of consensus, a kumbaya moment, if you will, amongst the commissioners, that we kind of make this decision in unison. And obviously the Big Ten kind of sort of wrenching that with what they voted on this week and what they announced yesterday. But I agree. I think eventually, I think obviously the Pac-12 is probably almost assuredly going to move in lockstep with what the Big Ten's doing. I think there is some debate in the Big 12 and the ACC over, you know, what's ultimately going to play out, even if they do end up moving that way. And I think everybody's also keeping an eye on the SEC. What's going to be decided on Monday? I think you talk with athletic directors and coaches around the league. They would obviously like to push this decision back and do as much as possible to play, but they understand that they might be boxed into the corner a little bit, not just from what's going on with the pandemic in their states, but also with the rest of college football and where they're moving to.
Brian, let's say that I gave you odds that one of these Power Five conferences would move their conference games to the spring. What odds would you need to take to feel good that your bet would cash?
Oh, I don't feel good about any bet cashing at all at this point in time. But I think you talk with people around, and everybody says that the spring is the last-ditch resort and all that. And I do get a sense that maybe that is growing into, not only kind of revisiting those plans that they looked at earlier this summer in terms of maybe moving everything there, but I think there's going to be a little bit more momentum for maybe the non-conference games are going to get moved to the spring. Maybe that's when you play the bowl games. I think they're going to kind of look at all the options on the table, as things kind of change really, really day to day and week by week. But I'm not confident in predicting anything because, frankly, you talk with everybody, they understand that things are going to change day to day and certainly month to month.
I know looking at it that it would be unorthodox and unconventional to move the football season to the spring, but these athletic departments trying to make as much money as they can to sort of recover from what's happened in the country, I can't think of a better solution than playing games in March. I mean, the odds of us having a vaccine are certainly higher in March than they would be in October. That seems to make the most sense if you want to try to make as much money as you possibly can.
I agree, and I think the spring model is definitely seems a lot doable. When you talk with people on the coaching side, obviously you're losing spring practice and you're making that up with game week preparations and playing games and all that. But I do think there is a sense that ultimately that there would just be almost too much going on campuses. Obviously, we talk about students coming back. I think maybe even greater numbers than universities would anticipate if there's some sort of vaccine. You're talking about television ramifications with Fox Sports and ESPN and all the other TV partners involved. So I think there would be a lot of moving parts to go into the spring that would have to be worked out, which is, I think, where some of the resistance from administrators kind of comes into play. But at the end of the day, everybody understands what how much money college football brings in, how much it supports in the general college athletics ecosystem. And they're going to do as much as possible to get all those dollars on the table. And if that ends up, in a couple of weeks saying, hey, we've got to move it to spring in order to get all that money, that's ultimately what I think they'll end up doing.
And part of that money, of course, comes from the fans that go to the games and pay for the parking and the nachos and the Cokes and all that stuff. What do you think the plan's going to be for fans, assuming that there's some version of football? Because the NFL right now is coming up with their contingency plans. We're hearing 25% of the Jaguars fans are going to be able to go, and 14,000 of the Baltimore Ravens fans in Kansas City. We're going to kind of find out a number here in the next couple of weeks. What do you think the plan is for fans actually going to college football games?
Well, there is no one singular plan across college football. That's for sure. This is definitely a very localized, regional decision. It's not really going to be made by any administrator in an athletic department. It's going to be made by what those local and state authorities really deem to be feasible. Certainly this fall and even into next spring. You're hearing those percentages and those numbers from the NFL. Probably a lot smaller than I think the people in college football were projecting a couple of months ago. But, if there ends up being, fans in the stands, it's not going to be all that many. Certainly you talk about all the things that kind of waterfall from a decision like that in terms of your season ticket base. Who's going to ultimately get to be part of that, 10% that is let into the stadium? How are you able to set up, whether it's restroom lines or all that stuff? Those are a lot of the pressing questions that a lot of people are asking right now. And as much as they can kind of try to come up with a solution, they know it can also just change overnight based on the decision by a local authority. So ultimately, it's about playing and the when and where first, and then kind of figuring out how fans can kind of possibly partake in that experience later.
Oh, no doubt. It's about playing and it's about starting. How much of it's about finishing and actually having a playoff and a champion? Because we were talking about the other day on the show, for all these sports, success is starting to become just do it and try it and see how much you can get in. How much do you think it really matters, or college football is going to try to actually crown a champion this season?
Yeah, I get the sense that, especially among the commissioner level, they've talked with about the college football playoff and what it would mean for a team to get into that. I know Bill Hancock, the executive director, has kind of said that the committee is going to do its best to select the four best teams, regardless of what ultimately ends up playing out, this season. But the fact of the matter is, we just don't know not only what the immediate college football season is going to look like for these conferences, but where are you going to play these bowls? Are you going to be allowed to play at the Rose Bowl as a semifinal? Are you going to be able to go down to Miami and play a title game? There's just so many question marks about ultimately how this is going to end up working out. And you listen to Gene Smith, the Ohio State Athletic Director, saying yesterday, we don't even know if there's going to be a season to play. And as much as everybody wants that to happen, they just don't know at this point. And I think that holds true for the college football playoff. As much as everybody would ultimately like to see a national champion crowned in 2020 or 2021.
If there is a season, how surprised will you be if a prominent player decides not to play? Like Trevor Lawrence comes to mind, a guy that, unless he completely has a catastrophic injury, he's going to be the number one overall pick in this year's draft. If I'm him, I highly consider playing this year. It's kind of like, what do I really have to gain versus what I have to lose? Do you think that's going to be a problem the upcoming season?
Well, it's definitely going to be an issue if they end up playing in the spring. I think you're going to see a rash of especially those high-profile players, Justin Fields, the Trevor Lawrence, decide to sit out just because of the NFL draft implications. But, I do get the sense that, as much as everybody talks about this virus, not as having as big an impact on this age range and these highly trained athletes, the fact of the matter is a lot of them still do have underlying health issues, and I wouldn't be surprised at all, like their professional peers, to start seeing some of those announcements once we kind of get a sense of when the games are going to be played, how the testing protocols are going to happen, how things might be able to come back to normal. I would imagine there's still going to be a lot of skittish parents out there that are making the decision for the kids, and also a lot of health authorities at these schools saying we don't want to have the liability of somebody that has this underlying condition possibly getting the virus on our campus. So I think there's going to be that in play as well, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see some guys certainly sit out this season and look towards 2021.
That is Brian Fisher with College Football Talk for the latest on what colleges and universities may do this upcoming 2020 fall semester. Brian, really appreciate you coming on. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to be on with you guys.
That's Brian Fisher joining us on the show. I just saw this scroll across my timeline. This is Jeff Goodman, who covers college basketball. He tweeted out, I polled more than 250 Division I men basketball coaches. 42% said still try and play the season as normal. 32% said move to January, both league and non-league games. 24% said move to January and only play league games. And 2% said cancel the season. We are obviously too far removed from it, where we need to be talking about canceling the college basketball season, but that appears to be the best scenario for everybody and moving it to the spring semester. Since the very beginning of this, there has been a belief, I'm not saying it's a certainty, there has been a belief that by next spring semester, we are going to be very close to having a vaccination and people are going to feel comfortable being around each other and operating in these spaces. So if I'm operating a billion-dollar business like college athletics, I'd be trying to get my sport into that window. Now, it comes with some disadvantages. Trevor Lawrence is not playing if college football starts in March. I would not advise him to do that. I don't think it's good business to do that. You also run the risk of trying to have a college football season from February to April and then asking players to turn around and then play again in August, which I don't think is in their best interest from a safety standpoint. So there's no good answer, but that's been the situation that we've all been in since March. None of these answers are good, but if I'm running a business and I'm trying to make as much money as possible, and let's not kid ourselves, college is a big time business. Playing college football games in front of 9,000 people doesn't seem like a way to operate if you're LSU or Florida.
Right, and part of the problem that I think these schools run into is the fans really want to watch these college basketball games, and they really want to watch college football games, and if they happen during the same season, there's going to be a lot of overlap, and that's not really good for these institutions. So we'll see what happens there. There's a reason why they kind of stagger these sports throughout the year. On top of that, I just wonder, like, we talk about January, and you're right, it sounds like that's a lot of people are expecting things to change. And I don't know if that's because the seasons change or the calendar changes or what it is. But if we don't have a vaccine by January, then we're going to have this exact same conversation until we do. And even though that's not what anybody wants to hear, I'm sorry, but that's the damn truth, is that we can talk about masks and social distancing and 25% of people getting there. But until this thing actually goes away, there are going to be issue after issue after issue with players pulling out and whole teams like they are in the MLS pulling out. So it's one of those things that I hope you're right and January comes around and that's a better time to play college football. But if we're in the same place that we are with the vaccine right now in January, then I don't know why it matters if we play tomorrow, January, or 2025.
I mean, I don't even know necessarily if the vaccine, but there has to be a greater understanding of how to treat it. Not everybody gets the flu shot. But if you get the flu, we know exactly what medicines for you to take to combat it and for you to get back on the correct path. So either that needs to happen where you can go take a medicine or something over the counter that everybody has access to fight this, or you're right, we're going to continue to be in this exact same situation. And I think what we're starting to see over the last 4 or 5 months is, man, the people that are in these sports are just absolutely ridiculous. Listen to what Lou Holtz had to say earlier today.
The way it is right now, they just don't want to have sports. And there's no way in this world you can do anything in this world without a risk. People stored Normandy. I took some grandchildren over there. They knew there was going to be cash. They knew there were going to be risk, but it was a way of life.
Did you guys hear what? I don't even know what to do with that comment. Did he just compare playing basketball at Kansas to Normandy? Just compare playing football at LSU to World War II? Is that what he just did? This is what I don't understand. And I mean this seriously. There are a group of people that really are making it seem like the rest of us don't want sports, which is absolutely nuts. Who among us doesn't want the NFL to come back? Who among us doesn't want to see the completion of the NBA season? I'm not the biggest soccer fan in the world. I'm happy that the EPL is going on and that the MLS is going on. If that's what you enjoy, have at it. I want all of us to have our sports back. Being on the side of the players' health and safety is not being anti-sports. I don't know why the two things have to be thrown into the same pot.
I went into war with a musket, and I came out of there. Why can't these football players go in there with a helmet and face protection? Like, it is hard to imagine there's still people out there, and maybe it's not fair for – how old's Lou Holtz? Lou Holtz got to be like 90.
A million years old.
No, he's got to – no, on the real, though. Google it. He's got to be over-under. I'm saying 90.
1,000 years old.
I'm being for real here. How old do you think he
is? I'm being for real, too.
I bet he's 92
years
old.
How you gonna say I'm being for real here, and you just made him sound like he was Sylvester the Cat?
I bet he's 90.
You can't do both. You can't mock the guy's voice, and then in the same breath said, I'm trying to be serious. You
can't do both.
He's 83.
Lou Holtz is at least... He's only 83 years old?
83.
83 plus 8. Teen.
Anyway,
100.
Yeah. There's people out there
that
have that opinion where, well, why aren't we having sports? Because, look, we went to war. It's kind of, well, we went to the moon. Why can't we play baseball? Are people serious when they say this? Like, honestly, I'm not an expert. I'm not a scientist. I'm not that smart. It took me forever just to get my undergrad. But I do understand the people that are smarter than me say that this virus can spread very easily, that social distancing helps, and that the mask actually does something. It's crazy that there's still, and it's a very small percentage of people, but I'd say there's 2% of people out there that are, you know, this is a total hoax, and go off there and just live your life like you would have before. I know it's an inconvenience, sir, ma'am, because it is to everybody out there, but I don't think what Lou Holtz is saying is necessarily the best idea.
Coming up in about 5 minutes, we'll get to a brand spanking new Levine's List. But before we get to a Levine's List, we've got a Levine idea.
Which one is this? I'm sorry, I'm lost here.
Your Chiefs idea?
Which one? I got a lot of them.
I don't. You tell me, my friend. You said you got a new name for it.
Oh, that one. Yeah, well, okay. So the Washington Redskins are about to change their name. Did you see the name they've come up with?
No.
The leader in the clubhouse right now is the Washington Warriors. I like it. Not original. Sounds good. Keep the color scheme. I think everybody's happy. Everybody likes the Golden State Warriors. Cool name. I think that passes off. My idea is, because at some point they're going to come calling for the Kansas City Chiefs name. I mean, it might not happen next year, might not happen in 5 years, but at some point you would think that the Chiefs, if they don't have to change their name, the conversation's going to come up, which means what do you have an alternative? Like, would you have a different name? And I actually do, and I've thrown this out there before, 913-576-7610. Tell me if you like or hate this idea on the Smitty's Garage Burgers and Beer text line. Now, I don't want them to change the Chiefs' name. I'm going to say it again. I hope that they can keep the name the Kansas City Chiefs. But if they don't, they have to change it to something else. I've got a suggestion. Here it is. How about the King Cobras, right? King Cobra, KC, so you keep the initials. It would be a shout-out to the old Marching Cobras. Remember the Marching Cobras?
I do.
It'd be a shout-out to the old Kansas City Kings, the basketball team. You could call Arrowhead the Snake Pit. I don't think that there's currently any reptiles in the NFL, so you could have a badass mascot, badass jerseys. If they're going to have to change the name, and if you have any suggestions, hit us up on the text line, 913-576-7610. Is there a better one than the Kansas City, the KC King Cobras? What do you think?
What? Bro, what are you talking about, man?
What?
You got a better idea?
What?
If you got a better idea, throw it out there. It's easy to say, no, that's stupid. Then give me a better one.
Monarchs.
Monarchs is fine. I mean, if they wanted to go with the Monarchs, I'd be fine with that. Not as original. Probably not as cool uniforms or mascot, but Monarchs is fine. I understand it. If you don't like those, give us one. Throw out a name.
I don't think they're changing their name.
Well, I hope they don't have to. Again, I want to reiterate that I don't think the King Cobras is a better name than the Kansas City Chiefs.
King Cobras just sounds like one of those names, like when you were trying to create a team on NBA Live 95. It just seems like one of the default names that they give your team.
It does. It does. But you call them the Cobras or you call them the Snakes or whatever, and Arrowhead's referred to the Snake Pit. It'd be cool. You could have like a little snake. I mean, the only problem that I have, like, I think Arrowhead is about as great of a game day experience as there possibly is, from the time that you pull into the parking lot to the actual sit. Like, there's not really a bad seat in the house, and I've always enjoyed all the atmosphere before and after, and obviously when they're winning and have Patrick Mahomes and all that stuff. The one thing that I haven't always been, like, the biggest fan of is KC Wolf. And nothing against KC Wolf. I don't have a problem with KC Wolf. It's just he still wears the same Zubas, I believe, that he wore back when I was going to games in the early 90s, and the hair's looking a little bit mangy. He's got some split ends. So if we're going to get rid of the Wolf mascot, why not have a snake slithering around? That's all I'm saying.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll be joined by Josh Vernier to get the latest on Major League Baseball as we are now 2 weeks away from opening day. Before we do that, let's get to a brand spanking new Levine's List.
So with all the college football conversation, it made me think, who are the 10 best college football programs of all time? Of course, that was not an easy list to narrow down, so here are teams that did not make the list. Florida State, Florida, Clemson, Auburn, or Georgia? Clemson was a tricky one because they were They were good, but not great. And then they've become the best college football program, I would say, over the last 5 or 6 years, at least them in Alabama. So they were a tricky one. Top 15, not top 10. Here's the list. Number 10, Miami, the U. They've won 5 national championships. And if you want to talk about, for about a 10-year period, an NFL factory, that was Miami. Hell, they had to make 2 separate 30 for 30s about the U. Number 9, the current national champion, LSU Tigers. 4-time national champions. Number 8.
I don't know if LSU is better than Clemson.
Both Tigers, both play in Death Valley. Number 8, Texas. Although Texas has really fallen off, and it's hard to imagine that every kid from the state of Texas, which is the richest football high school recruiting grounds in the country, wants to play for the University of Texas, and somehow they've been bad now going on like 5, 6, 10 years. It's incredible. Speaking of bad, that used to be a powerhouse. Number 7, Nebraska. See, that and I were talking about this last week. If you're a kid right now who's like 18, 19 years old, you have no idea that Nebraska used to be the most dominant college football program, again, for like a 10-year period, certainly throughout the 90s.
They were Clemson.
Number 6, Michigan. Michigan. They're the winningest Division I football program. They've got 9 national championships. It just doesn't feel right with Jim Harbaugh. It feels like they missed the boat on that. Like when he got the Stanford job, he probably should have been the Michigan coach at that time. And it just doesn't, it feels like they're just stuck in purgatory where every year they're going to win 9 games, but they're never going to win a national championship.
I kind of feel like what's happened now is a lot of those teams that are in the North that are just holding themselves to the good old days where that's just not where the talent is anymore in this country. Like how many teams would you say are great in college football north of the Mason-Dixon line?
Ohio State, Michigan. That's it? Yeah, not a lot of them.
See what I mean?
Yeah, not a lot of them. Number 5, Oklahoma. Oklahoma's become the college football quarterback factory the last 5 years. They've got 7 national championships. Number 4, USC. I always feel like USC, even when they're down, they're about to be back up. Like if you told me that in the next 5 years, USC wins a national championship or two, I'm not going to be very surprised. I mean, that's freaking USC. Number 3, as you mentioned, Ohio State, one of those teams from the North. Oh, here's another one, Notre Dame at number 2. Notre Dame's just weird, though, because they're just like they're themselves. They don't play in a conference. They're going to this year, the AECC, is that right?
They are.
Every conference has been begging for Notre Dame to come to them for years, and finally it takes coronavirus for them to finally say, okay, cool, we'll go play for the ACC. Notre Dame's got 13 national championships. Just ask Lou Holtz, because he was there when they won the 1988 national championship.
And with a bunch 1. Of players who were tough, and they would have stormed the beach in Normandy. Am I right, Lou?
You're damn right, Rob. You're damn right they would.
I don't know if Notre Dame's a better program than Michigan. Not like last 30 years. I think Notre Dame has just always gotten the benefit of touchdown Jesus because, I mean, we've seen a couple of years where Notre Dame maybe was in a bowl game that they shouldn't have been in, and they got the absolute beasts when they had to play 3 somebody from the South.
I never want to hear you talk about again. Touchdown Jesus, Rudy Rudiker, or Rocket Ishmael. You got it, son? And number 1, Alabama, 15 national championships. That's today's Levine's List.
Your Lou Holtz makes the Jar Jar Binks sound like Jesus' voice.
Oh, this is Jar Jar Binks.
Like, I don't know what Jesus' voice sounds like. I'm sure it was golden. That's what your Jar Jar Binks sounds like compared to Lou Holtz.
Can I get one more Lou Holtz in before the hour's up?
Go ahead.
This is the last time, and then I'll just go ahead and retire Lou Holtz's voice because the more that I hear it in my ear, the more I want to slap myself in the face.
Coming up next, we'll catch up with somebody who is certainly very familiar with Lou Holtz as a Michigan fan. Josh Verner will join the show coming up next. It's The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.